Will you help me or not?
Perhaps I should just turn her over to you, White Slaver,
the demon lord said, his voice deadly.
My kind has suffered enough at your hands. Maybe it is time for you to get a taste of your own medicine.
Odion blanched.
We've had a beneficial working relationship for years now.
And yet you have grown old and fat and complacent. A gentleman farmer with nothing to your name other than a pretty house and 1,000 slaves.
Malfuric sneered.
Our deal was made with the expectation that you would provide me a flow of riches from your world. You have not kept up your end of the bargain.
Odion forced a smile.
I didn't know you felt this way. I will be more than happy to recompense you in any way you wish. I just need the girl dead first.
Or maybe, Alaria said as she stood up from the mezzanine where we hid. You should just hand him over to me.
What the hell? What are you doing?
I hissed.
We're not in combat, she whispered. You said I could do anything I want. So I am. We're going to have to revisit that subject,
I seethed. All the guards down in the main throne room immediately brandished their spears and swords. I guess none of them considered Alaria a real threat, because nobody made a move to storm the mezzanine. Malfuric gazed up at her, and an unpleasant smile spread across his face. Odion, on the other hand, looked like he was about to shit his pants. He tried to bolt, but the nearest guard seized him and pulled him back, pinning his arms behind him.
You said she was a great beauty, Odion,
Malfuric chuckled.
But I thought you prone to exaggeration. Now I see it was one of the few times you ever understated anything. Come down here, my darling. I would have a closer look at you.
I looked up at Alaria.
Is this a good idea?
Too late now, she whispered, then stepped up onto the railing, jumped off and glided down on outstretched bat wings.
Stig,
I whispered. No answer. I looked behind me. My imp was nowhere to be seen.
Stig,
I whispered harshly. Stig crawled out of the shadows on his hands and knees, then collapsed on the ground with his face on the floor.
Yes, boss,
he answered drunkenly.
Damn it, Stig. No more wine for you, I ordered angrily. Hang back in case I need you later. Got it?
Got it, boss,
he mumbled into the floor. I shook my head and peered down at the drama unfolding below. Alaria walked straight over to Odion, though she spoke to the demon lord on the throne.
Give him to me. I'll take the worm off your hands.
Malfuric looked her up and down in a way that made my blood boil and my skin crawl at the same time. Then he laughed.
I'm sure you would, but he is somewhat amusing to me. It would be like asking to slaughter one of my pets.
What do you want in exchange for him? She asked.
You.
Alaria gazed at him coolly.
I'm not for sale, nor are my affections.
That isn't what Odion told me,
Malfuric leered. Alaria glared at the old man but kept speaking to the demon lord.
Slavery isn't exactly a fair trade, now is it? Give him to me as a gift. I'm sure we can work something out. You said that you wanted enrichment.
Where is your master, little succubus?
Malfuric asked.
I left him back in the real world.
Excellent. Then he won't be able to stop me from doing this.
The demon lord raised his hand, and suddenly a blast of black energy slammed into Alaria and sent her screaming to her knees. Oh, shit. I could see Alaria's hit points dropping rapidly.
What the hell is he going to?
All of a sudden, I knew exactly what he was going to do. Oh, no. He got her to within 5% of her hit points, then stood up from the throne and strode over to her. He produced a glowing blade from out of nowhere, literally conjured it from a mist of darkness and shadow. and then walked up to her and slid the tip underneath her collar.
I think you shall have a new master, little one,
the demon lord rumbled.
And it shall be.
No, I yelled as I hit the bastard with a blast of dark fire. Malfuric roared and turned around to look at me. My dark fire danced along his red skin like sunspots on the surface of a star, but then just as quickly disappeared. Oh, shit. I hadn't checked his stats before I attacked him, so I hadn't known how many hit points he had. I checked now. Level 120. 1,000,000 hit points. Shit. This was going to be a bloodbath. It was like a puppy going up against a Sherman tank. Not to mention the 24 guards he had around him, who I'm sure were at least 100K apiece. Screw it, I thought, and immediately hit Ilaria with self-sacrifice, raising her hit points. If I was going to go out, I was going to go out fighting. Then I could get resurrected and figure out a way to build an army. Maybe some old friends I'd quested with for years could help me do a raid on the palace and kill this asshole. What I didn't count on was that Malfuric didn't necessarily want to kill me. He had a range of non-destructive powers, including something called Shadow Lock. Malfuric flung a bolt of red energy that slammed into me and knocked me onto my back. My ivory rod disconnected from my shoulder strap and rolled across the floor in Stig's direction. Red letters appeared in the center of my field of vision. Shadow Locked. Stunned. A counter started down from 10, and I watched the seconds pass with mounting dread. I was unable to move and unable to cast any spells. Stig, I whispered harshly. In answer, I heard a drunken snore. The one thing I could move was my head. I craned my neck back and saw my imp lying on the ground, his ass up in the air, his hands folded dreamily under his head. A pool of slobber gathering on the floor beneath them. Then it got worse. Red energy surrounded me, lifted me to a standing position, and floated me down through the air to the throne room dais. I saw Ilaria's terrified expression as she watched me approach Malfuric's outstretched hand. The spell lock was almost finished, though, and then it hit zero. I immediately cast Terrify on Malfuric. It would be fun to see the asshole turn and run like a little bitch. Except the words target immune appeared midair. Shit. Fine. Unholy quartet, then. Four imps burst up from the ground in a square around Malfuric. But just as they were about to cast fireballs at him, the throne room guards speared them through their backs. My imps disappeared in a burst of flame as their hit points dropped to zero. Uh-oh. I tried casting Soul Suck on him. It worked for a few seconds, until he shadow-locked me again. Malfuric brought me down to eye level with him, which meant I was still 8 feet off the floor.
So you are her new master?
The demon lord grinned.
You are a fool, boy. Do you know that?
Go ahead and kill me, asshole, I said, just waiting for the new 10-second counter to hit zero.
No,
the demon lord said thoughtfully.
I don't think so. I know your kind. Warlocks like you are not bound by the normal human rules of death. If I kill you, you'll just come back to bother me again, like some unnatural pest.
Shit. I'd never run across an NPC who understood the mechanics of respawning. But this bastard certainly did. He was right, and both he and I knew it, unfortunately.
No,
the demon grinned.
I think you will serve far better as a slave in my mines.
He waved his hand, and searing pain erupted in both my wrists and my neck. It was like molten lava had touched my skin. I screamed and waited for my hit points to drop to zero and blackness to engulf me. But instead, my health didn't budge at all. What did happen, though, was glowing bands of metal snaked around my wrists and cooled into solid bracers. From the pain around my neck, I assumed the exact same thing was happening there, too.
Now I can let you go,
the demon lord chortled. He released the red field around me, and I crumpled into a pile on the floor. Bastard. I held up my hands and prepared to fire a dark bolt. But nothing happened. What the hell? I looked at my action bar. Every single one of my spellcasting abilities was grayed out. The bright colors had been replaced with ghostly grays and whites, just like back in the wizard's tower. The only difference was my weakness in the tower had been limited to a specific location. Once I left the tower, I was back to normal. My current predicament was tied to my manacles and collar, which meant my powerlessness was permanent until I removed them. Oh, shit.
Take him to the mines,
the demon lord ordered. Two soldiers stepped up on either side of me and grabbed my arms. At 8 feet tall and about 400 pounds each, they were more than a match for me. It was like a couple of linebackers holding up a toddler. They started to march me off down the stairs.
Ian!
Alaria screamed. I looked back at her anguished face and realized it was the first time she'd ever used my real name.
I'm sorry, she sobbed.
In that instant, my heart broke. I'd wanted to save her. Actually, I'd wanted her. And that's why I'd done all this. But I wasn't going to get her. In fact, it appeared as though I was about to lose her forever. But she cared for me. That much was evident from her anguished cry. That was something, at least.
Wait,
Malfuric ordered his guards, and they paused with me dangling between them. The demon lord looked down at Alaria.
You seem to be fond of this particular master.
She looked warily between me and Malfuric, unsure whether saying anything would lead to worse treatment for me. Malfuric knew exactly what she was thinking and chuckled.
It is surprising to me, only because Odion says that you are intent upon tracking down and murdering your former masters.
Ian never mistreated me, she murmured. In fact, he's been nothing but kind.
How touching,
the demon sneered.
Do you care for him?
She looked at me, then cast her eyes down at the floor. As you said, I'm fond of him.
Do you think he loves you?
Her eyes flickered up at me again, and then she looked down, shamefaced.
Yes, that was why he came with me to kill Odion.
My heart dropped. She knew what she'd been doing all along. She'd been playing me. I should have listened to Stig from the beginning. And Lil. Definitely not my heart.
So you used him,
Malfuric chuckled.
As cruelly, in your own way, as your former masters used you.
She gave Malfuric a hateful look.
Not nearly so cruelly.
Well then, allow me to complete what you started.
Malfuric looked over at me, then said,
Watch closely, little warlock.
He hit Alaria again with the black energy, and sapped away almost all of her hit points. When Malfuric was finished, she was writhing on the floor, barely alive. The demon lord reached down, grabbed her wings, and hoisted her roughly into the air, so that I could see everything about to happen. Then he brought his glowing blade up underneath her collar and sliced the velvet band from the inside. It fell off her neck, tumbled off the slope of her breasts and into Malfuric's outstretched hand.
You see, now she is mine.
He laughed maliciously, and my heart was crushed. No matter what she might have done to make me follow her here on this suicide mission, it was nothing compared to the pain of having her taken away from me. Malfuric stretched out his hand, and swirls of golden energy circled around Alaria. Her bikini of black leather was replaced with chainmail, and her black leather thigh-highs became metal greaves and boots. Also, a new collar formed around her neck, a golden one, attached to a heavy chain that he held in one hand. I would have to say that she looked absolutely stunning, except I knew her outfit and chains now bound her to a new master. I'd lost her forever.
Ahem.
Odeon cleared his throat. We all looked over at him. Everyone had completely forgotten about him until now.
Since you've taken care of my succubus problem, I'll just be going,
Odeon said, pulling away from the two soldiers holding him.
I hope you enjoy her services as much as I.
Tarry a moment, old friend,
Malfuric growled.
I don't want to bother you. I'm sure you have things you'd like to do with her, so I'll...
Malfuric let go of Ilaria's bat wings, and she fell to the ground with a clang of metal against stone. Then he stepped closer to Odeon.
Do you know what I would most like to do with her?
The old man gulped.
I can only imagine, but...
I would have her submit to me willingly. How would you suggest I go about such a thing, warlock?
Odeon stuttered.
I'm sure I don't know.
How could you? After decades forcing others like me to act against their own will.
Malfuric chuckled.
But I have an idea how to win her heart.
And how is that?
Odeon asked.
By giving her yours.
Before Odeon could react, Malfuric plunged his hand into the warlock's chest. The old man screamed as Malfuric pulled his hand out with a creaking, bone-snapping crunch. In his palm, he held a beating human heart. Odeon gasped, opening and closing his mouth like a fish, and then collapsed lifeless on the throne room floor. 5,000 XP floated up in front of me. I guess if an ex-master died, it got credited to me, no matter who killed him. Not that the experience points really helped me right now. Malfuric laughed, then set Odeon's heart ablaze and cast it down in front of Ilaria, who looked at it with curious detachment.
For you, my love,
Malfuric chortled.
A gift. One heart in exchange for another.
She looked up at the demon lord, tears streaking her cheeks. I will never love you.
In time. For now, fondness is all I ask.
Malfuric looked over at me.
Enjoy the mines, little warlock, and think of all the things that I will do to your love when she finally submits.
No! I screamed as the guards dragged me away. The demon lord laughed.
Do not worry, human. I will not force her like your kind does. In the end, I will break her, and she will submit willingly. The one thing she would never do for you.
All I could hear as they dragged me out of the hall and towards the mines was Malfuric's mocking laughter. But what stayed with me in my mind's eye were the tears on Ilaria's face as she stared after me in despair.
35. And that was how I wound up a slave in the mines of Abaddon. The two guards took me down into the depths of one of the caverns and found an overseer. The overseer shackled me to a chain gang, a bizarre menagerie of other demons. Some with squid heads, some with devil heads, some with no heads at all, and slapped a pickaxe in my hand. Along with the other prisoners, I began to mine glowing orange ore by gouging rocks from the larger cliff face. The work was hard, the heat oppressive, and the stench of sulfur was everywhere. I had newfound sympathy for all those people who had been around me when I smelled like a skunk. I surreptitiously tried all my menu options while I dug. I tried to log out, I tried to access my email, I tried to access chat. Nothing. Everything was grayed out, including the spells on my action bar. I was well and truly screwed. As I dug, I thought of Ilaria. The look of alarm when she saw what was going to happen to me. The tears she cried when they hauled me away. I was more worried about her than me. I knew what Malfuric had promised. that he wouldn't force himself upon her, but would make her submit to him of her own free will. But that didn't mean I trusted the bastard. My heart ached, and my anxiety only grew with every passing moment. As I toiled on the chain gang, the reality of slavery was all around me. Everywhere I looked were brass collars and manacles, chains and misery. The night was filled with despairing cries, the crack of whips, the blood-curdling screams. Besides the stink of sulfur, there was the stench of something else. Despair and suppressed rage at our collective helplessness. It hung over everything like a cloud. For the first time, I realized exactly how cruel I'd been to put those collars on Ilaria and Stig. Stig? What had happened to him? Last I'd seen him, he was passed out in the mezzanine of the castle. Drunk little bastard. What was he going to do now? Half of me hoped against hope that he would pop back up and deliver me from this awful situation. The other half figured he was already on his way back to the plantation house, eager to escape this place. After all, if no one ever freed me, he was basically an imp without a master, which meant he could do whatever he damn well pleased. Not that I could blame him. Now that I finally understood what he must have felt as my servant, I couldn't blame him at all for anything he might do. I knew it was only a video game, but this shit felt real. It's not every day that you had to confront questions of man's inhumanity to man and other creatures, and your own complicity in that system, while you were forced into working on a chain gang. As the heat and stench and backbreaking work got to me, I started to get angry at the game itself. Where were the administrators? Where was my supervisor? John, you asshole! What the hell did I do to you to make you leave me here? If I ever got out of this goddamn long-term immersion rig, I was suing West Tech for every effing penny I could squeeze out of them. But I couldn't depend on my employers to get me out of this. As far as I was concerned, I could rely only on myself. I decided to accidentally hit my chain with my pick, just to see what would happen. I tried it once. As soon as the pick's tip hit the metal link, an agonizing electric shock raced through my body. Apparently, there was a built-in magical defense against trying to free yourself. The demons around me laughed.
"It's not that easy, human, or we would have done it long ago," one of the demons cackled. "Back to work," the overseer roared, and cracked his fiery whip in the air above us.
I worked my hands to the bone those first few hours, rubbing blisters on my palms that popped and grew raw. The agony was oddly specific and terribly realistic. I knew that if I could only use Soulsuck to pull away one of the overseer's hit points, I would be able to replenish my diminishing health. But I couldn't access the magical ability, or any others. I was stuck. About 6 hours after I'd arrived, the chains binding my feet to the other demons magically disappeared.
"Chow time," the overseer roared.
I shuffled over to a fire where demons were serving slop from a large cauldron. A guard gave me a stone bowl, and I held it out for my ladleful of thin gruel with chunks of gristly meat and rotting vegetables.
"Jesus. You should eat that, human," a voice said. "It's the only thing that will keep you alive down here."
I turned around to see the same demon that had laughed at me earlier on the chain gang. He was a hunched-over blue thing, what you would get if you crossed a triceratops with a dwarf and then threw in a little blue food coloring. His face was long, lizard-like, and ended in a hooked beak. There was a crest on his head, and he had long, clawed fingers. "I will," I said. "I just won't like it."
"Whatever you don't want, give it to me. I'll give you a copper for it."
Is that what I'd come to? Single solitary coppers traded with prisoners on a chain gang, just to survive? I wouldn't even be able to put the coin in my bag, since everything in there was locked off to me. "I'm good," I said. "But thanks."
"My name is Grok, human. If you need anything, or decide you want to trade your food, come see me."
I'll remember that, I said, and began to slurp the slop in my bowl. Jesus, that's freaking awful. It literally tasted the way that mud smells, if you were to mix in some grass clippings for taste. Plus the meat was gooey in some places, like it was putrefying, and gristly like cartilage in others. I wanted to throw up, but I didn't dare. With every mouthful I ate, my hit points, which had been gradually decreasing the last several hours, crept up bit by bit. Not only that, but the blisters on my palms and fingers were visibly healing. Not all the way, but they went from patches of raw, stinging flesh to newly formed, sensitive pink skin. The food might have tasted horrific, but it was going to keep me alive. But did I actually want to stay alive? If I died, wouldn't I just get resurrected at the newest graveyard? It was worth a shot. Or was it? All of my options on the menu were grayed out. What if I was caught in some sort of coma in real life? What if my body was in a limbo similar to the one I found myself in now? I doubted anything would happen. I would probably just get resurrected here on the chain gang. But my anxiety about the situation was enough to give me pause. I wasn't desperate enough, yet, to try to use death as my escape route. I'm sure that moment was coming, but for the time being, I hadn't even begun to figure out my other options. After I choked down the soup, I was allowed a short break while everyone else on the chain gang was fed. I wandered through the camp, looking at all the faces, ugly and scarred, but worse than that, hopeless and despairing. Then I overheard a conversation in the shadows.
We can escape, I tell you!
There was a small group of demons arguing amongst themselves. A goat-headed guy, a spider-faced thing with eight eyes, and a frog with horns.
How? We can't even break the manacles.
If we all rush the guards at once, we can do it.
Ha. There were no coincidences in the game. I stepped over to the conspirators and whispered, I won in. They looked at me threateningly as they turned to face me.
You should learn not to stick your nose in other people's business, human.
I realized I might have misjudged the situation and quickly tried to talk myself out of it.
Look, I just need to get out of here, that's all.
Like the rest of us don't,
Goathead snarled. All I'm saying is, anything I can do to help you escape, I will.
You're all fools,
a familiar voice spoke behind us. We all turned to see Grok hobbling over to us.
This is none of your concern, the horned frog said.
If your actions bring the lash down on my back or cut my rations in half, you had better believe it's my business,
Grok snapped.
This talk of escaping? It's a fool's errand. You'll only make it worse for the rest of us.
So what would you rather do, I asked.
Die in chains, a slave?
The other guys murmured in agreement. Although that was a little ironic, seeing as they'd wanted to beat my ass 30 seconds ago. Grok shook his head in contempt.
I would like to see the next day, whether I am in chains or not.
Maybe it was something about our conversation, or maybe it was just the images of slavery all around me, but it got my brain to worrying. I was reminded of Spartacus, not that television show with a bunch of gratuitous dude nudity, aka dudity, but the only Stanley Kubrick film with Michael Douglas and Laurence Olivier. There's a story from my world of a man who was a slave, I said. He was forced to fight as a gladiator, and eventually escaped slavery and won his freedom. But when he didn't turn his back on the other slaves. He went through the countryside and freed them, and together they fought and nearly destroyed the most powerful empire in the world. The others around me chattered in excitement. I was getting pretty pumped up. I wanted to yell out, I am Spartacus!
I've never heard of this story before,
Grok said. And you wouldn't either unless you had Netflix or Amazon Prime. It's because it's a human story.
You said almost destroyed the empire. What did you mean by that? What became of the slave warrior?
Oh, yeah. I'd kind of forgotten the part where Kirk Douglas ends up crucified with 1,000 of his closest friends. That sort of quelled my enthusiasm momentarily, but only by a little bit. It didn't work out, I said.
but that doesn't mean it couldn't work out for us.
Any talk of rebellion is a daydream, nothing more, Grok said. Until you can break these bonds, human, your talk is worth less than nothing. Even if we escaped, they would hunt us down and kill us. The only way to end our oppression will be to kill all our oppressors, and that will never happen.
But if I can figure out a way, I asked.
Then I will be the first to join your rebellion. But until you can find a way to break our bonds, you waste your breath even to speak of it.
He began to hobble away. Grok, I called out. The blue demon turned back. Why do you want to live to see another day if all you're going to do is spend it in chains? I asked.
Another day in chains is preferable to death.
So you have something to live for? Grok nodded.
Life itself.
Then you have something worth fighting for. Grok just stood there looking at me. But rather than dismiss me, he nodded.
Perhaps.
Then he turned and walked away. The other demons congratulated me and slapped me on the back, but when I pressed them further, I found out they had no plans. Grok had been right. Their talk had been worth less than nothing. Suddenly the overseer barked,
"Back to work, maggots!"
We shuffled back to our places on the chain gang. As I grabbed my pick and began digging again, I thought back to what I'd said to Grok and smiled. I had something worth living for, and worth fighting for. She was up in that palace. 36. 6 hours later, when they called off work for the night, I collapsed onto the ground, more tired than I'd ever been in my life. We shuffled off to some rickety barracks at the other end of the mine, where the most powerful demons claimed what few beds there were. Not that the beds were that great, basically just pallets stuffed with hay sticking out of 100 tiny rips in the sackcloth. But it was better than sleeping on the hard floor, which is what I was going to have to do, along with dozens of other less fortunate demons. Frankly, though, I was so tired it didn't really matter to me. I lay down, closed my eyes, and I was out. It felt like only a few seconds had passed when suddenly I had a vivid dream of Stig whispering in my ear.
Boss, wake up!
No, I murmured. Sleep time.
Boss, snap out of it!
I woke up to my body being lightly shaken. Standing before me was my tiny imp, and to my shame, I couldn't help but notice the leather collar around his neck. Stig, I whispered, you came back.
Of course I did, boss.
How did you get past the guards?
It was easy. They don't pay much attention except to their booze and cards.
Can you get me out of these? I asked, holding up my manacles. Stig stroked his chin, or what little he had of one.
I could try hitting it with my fireballs.
Great. Now I was going to be target practice. But that was better than being a slave. All right, let's try it, I agreed. I got up, tiptoed over the dozens of bodies lying on the ground, and made my way outdoors. I looked out through the darkness. Apparently the sky was always black here. But there were no guards nearby. Stig and I snuck around the building and hunkered down between the wooden barracks and the craggy canyon wall. I held out my arm and braced it against the cliff. All right, let's see what happens. The imp summoned a fireball and shot it right at the manacle. Unfortunately, it didn't do a damn thing except burn my arm. Damn it, I hissed. Stig snickered. You're enjoying this, aren't you? He shrugged.
Just a little.
I gritted my teeth in frustration. If I can't get these things off, there's no way I'm going to be able to go up against Malfuric.
What about those pickaxes I saw you guys using, boss?
I already tried that. It didn't go well. Stig thought for a second.
We could try hitting it with your staff. Maybe it could break it.
My scepter of the servant. The one I'd gotten after we killed Jastoff. I'd lost it when Malfuric attacked me. Where is it?
Under here.
Stig pulled the staff out from a hole in the rocky ground beneath the wooden barracks, then handed it over to me. I looked around in consternation. I had no idea how many times I was going to have to hit the manacles before they broke, and the racket might bring every guard in the mines running. But it was a chance I had to take. I got a good grip on the scepter, then lined it up with the manacle on my left wrist. I brought the scepter up and down slowly, sort of like a mini practice swing with a hammer if you only had one shot at hitting the nail. One, two. As I brought it down the second time, the ivory staff touched the manacle with a tiny clink. The metal bracer melted away like it was being eaten by acid, and it fell off my arm in pieces. I stared at it in amazement. What just happened?
I don't know, but it was pretty great, boss, Stig said. No worries about the guards coming.
I touched the staff to my other manacle, and it was eaten away, too. It fell apart in ragged scraps of metal, as did the one on my neck. I was free. As soon as the manacles and collar were off me, every option in my action bar appeared in full color again, which meant every single one of my spells was now available. I checked my game menu. Logout and all the other options to contact my supervisors were grayed out, but everything else was back to functional. Yes, I hissed and pumped my arm in triumph. Stig, you are the man!
I'm a demon, boss,
he said quizzically. That's right, the best demon ever. Now all we have to do is... My voice trailed off. What I was going to say was, now all we have to do is sneak back up to the castle, break back in, and go up against the same asshole who imprisoned me before. As if on cue, a window appeared in front of me with two quests. I am Spartacus. Start a slave revolt in the mine pits of Abaddon, and lead the rebellion to overthrow Malfuric. XP 10,000. To hell with the devil. Slay Malfuric and take the throne of Abaddon for yourself. XP 25,000. Holy shit. In the heat of the moment, I'd forgotten all about my earlier conversation with Grok and the others. That was it. The game was giving me a way to rescue Alaria. Which was kind of freaky, because now it was naming quests after conversations I'd had. But I pushed that aside. I had more important things to think about. I hastily hit accept and whispered, Stig, I have to go back inside the prisoner's barracks. He frowned.
Why do you want to do that, boss?
Because if we want to save Alaria, we need to start a slave revolt. I crept back inside, with Stig standing watch at the door for any mine guards. I found Grok in one of the lower bunks, and gently shook him by the arm. He woke with a start and pressed a crude copper knife to my throat.
What? Human? He hissed angrily. What are you trying to do?
Start a revolution, I said with a grin, and touched the ivory staff to one of his manacles. Like magic, the touch of the staff ate away at the metal and it crumbled to dust. Grok pulled back and gasped in shock. He looked at his arm as though he'd never seen it before, which was sort of true. The manacle had been on there so long that the skin had grown up around the edges, and the underlying color was far lighter than the rest of his body.
It's not possible, he whispered.
You said you would be the first to join my rebellion if I could free you, I whispered. You ready? Or do you want to spend the rest of your life in these damn barracks? He looked at me, and a grin slowly spread across his face.
I think it's time to fight for the thing I want to live for, human.
We set to work quickly, Grok waking up the prisoners and explaining what was going on, and then me touching the staff to their manacles and collars. There were a few who shook their heads in fear and refused to be released from their shackles, but that was only a handful amongst the 70 or so in the barracks. The rest eagerly listened to me and Grok as we whispered to them in the dark. We can't do this alone, I said with Stig standing next to me. We have to storm the castle, and we have to destroy Malfuric. And if we're going to do that, we need the help of thousands of others. Someone whispered harshly, Why can't we just escape? Grok, I said, why don't you take that one?
Because unless we destroy the oppressors, they will hunt us down. This is an affront to their power, and they will not stand for it. We must either kill them or be killed.
Anybody who's got a problem with that can stay behind, I said. This is strictly a volunteer mission.
Many of us will die, one of the demons said.
Yes, but if we all work together, many more of us will live. And the ones who die get to go out on their own terms, not as slaves. And maybe take down a few of the bastards who tormented you for years. My argument won over more than a few of the holdouts.
What do we do?
One of the others asked. Spartacus was my blueprint. First we kill the guards, I said. Then we go free more allies.
We went and found our picks in the darkness, lying by the chains on the ground. Apparently the guards were so overconfident in their prisoners' submissiveness that they didn't even bother to lock up a bunch of deadly weapons every night. Their mistake. I told everyone beforehand how important it was to remain quiet, and they all got the message. When we finally crept up on the guardhouse, there were only a handful of night watchmen. They were gambling with dice on the ground, snorting and laughing and drinking, completely unprepared for what was about to hit them. I held up my hand, motioning Stig and everyone else behind me to wait, and then I hit all five of the guards with dark fire. They turned around in surprise and were immediately swarmed with a silent mass of prisoners who hacked away at them with their picks. God knows they'd had plenty of practice over the years. The guards were dead before they hit the ground. I didn't even have to fire another shot. We quickly climbed the stairs to the top of the cavern, then went to the next mine over.
How much time do we have? I asked Grok.
6 hours to sleep, and only one has passed.
5 hours to build an army. It was doable, if we split up. I explained to everyone what I would need them to do. I was going to stay in this camp, but they would have to spread out to the other mines and start silently killing the guards. Once they had slaughtered the overseers, they had to bring back all the prisoners to me, where I would remove their shackles.
Think that could work? I asked Grok. It's worth the risk, human.
I waited there in the valley for Stig for what seemed like an eternity. During that time, I thought of Alaria and what she was doing up in the castle, or what was being done to her. I cringed and prayed to the video game gods that they would spare her long enough for me to show up with the cavalry. I heard a few cries throughout the canyons, here and there, night guards as they bit the dust, but overall my pickaxe assassins were impressively quiet. Within minutes, a steady stream of prisoners began running up to me with pickaxes in their hands, their manacled arms held out in supplication. Help me. I touched their manacles and collars like a priest giving out some sort of benediction. One by one their bonds fell off, and they raced off in groups to free their brothers in the other valleys. First there were 50 who approached, then 100, 500, 2,000. Until a sea of faces of all different shapes and colors looked out at me, not only from the bottom of the mine, but from the rim of the canyon overhead. Grok fought his way through the crowd to me.
Is that it? I asked him. Has everyone been freed? We've killed every single guard surrounding Abaddon, and almost every single prisoner has pledged themselves to your cause. What do we do now?
I looked up at the faces staring down at me. They had finally regained their hope. Now they were looking for a leader.
We attack the castle, I yelled out, my voice echoing through the canyon. Me to save the woman I love, and you to take back your freedom once and for all.
A deafening roar went up around me, enough to shake the very foundations of Abaddon. I am Spartacus indeed.
37. Our little pep rally had been heard by the guards, but that was all right. The enthusiasm and fury it generated more than made up for the lack of surprise.
You should have seen the looks on the palace guards as 8,000 former slaves headed towards them with pickaxes in hand. I'm sure a few of those guards shat their metal-plated breeches.
I softened up the ranks first with dozens of shots of dark fire, then continued to hit them with doomsday as the prisoners surged forward. There was the clank, clank, clank of 1,000 picks against the demon guard's armor, but in combination with my spells, the bastards went down like flies. We stormed into the castle, swamping any guard that got in our way. Spears were thrown, but that was the extent of their ranged weapons. No archers to deal with.
Everyone inside the castle dropped like flies, too. A sea of demons swarmed into the throne room with me as the nucleus. And there was the boss man himself, the giant with a million hit points. Malfuric stood up from his throne in shock as he saw us burst through the throne room doors. I could see what he was looking at, since our army was reflected in the giant mirror behind his throne. And I've gotta say, it was pretty damn impressive. Bound to the throne by a long golden chain, Alaria sat there slumped on the ground, despondent. When she saw the crowd surging towards, she reacted in confusion. But as soon as the front ranks parted and I stepped out with Stig, she cried out with joy and leapt to her feet. Even from 50 feet away, I could see the tears welling up in her eyes.
"So you have your own army,"
Malfuric jeered.
"Let us see if you are willing to sacrifice all your pawns against my queen."
I didn't like the sound of that. "Hold on!" I shouted to my foot soldiers, and they all stopped on a dime. Without any of them wearing a slave collar, it should be pointed out.
"No,"
Malfuric chortled.
"Then, little slave king, you can face my queen alone."
Malfuric snapped his fingers, and suddenly Alaria put out her arms. Fireballs glowed in the palms of her hands. "What are you doing?" I asked in disbelief as I stared into her eyes. Tears coursed down her cheek.
"I can't resist him. I can't disobey. He's my master now," she cried.
She threw her fireballs at me. They exploded against my body, taking off a good chunk of my hit points. I turned back to her and saw her shaking, her entire body racked with sobs.
"Kill me," she begged. "Kill me before I have to kill you."
"I will let you choose, little warlock,"
Malfuric laughed.
"Kill your succubus, and I will let your army go in peace. Try to save her, though, or attack me, and all of you will die."
I gazed into Alaria's tortured eyes and tried to figure this puzzle out. I reasoned that after I killed her, nothing would actually happen. Malfuric would just summon her back again.
"And if you are thinking that she would be resurrected like you, little warlock, know this. The spell I have put on her prevents her from ever being resurrected again. When you kill her, she stays dead. Forever. Make your choice."
Damn it. I would have gladly sacrificed myself to save her, but I wouldn't force my army to do the same. Not after everything I'd learned, the hard way, I might add. I didn't know what to do. Fortunately, one of my lieutenants did. Grok stepped out from the front ranks and shouted defiantly at Malfuric,
"No one asked me for my choice."
Another demon shouted from the throng,
"Nor me."
Dozens, then hundreds of voices rose up.
"Nor me! Nor me! Nor me!"
My heart soared in my chest as I turned to face my soldiers. "Anyone who wants to leave can go, but anyone who stays fights." Every single voice in the hall answered out as one.
"We fight!"
The entire crowd roared and raced towards Malfuric. The demon lord bellowed in anger. He blasted the front lines with rays of black energy, killing dozens, but hundreds more surged forward to take their place, then washed over him like a wave, pickaxes striking into his arms and chest with wild abandon. Meanwhile, Alaria kept blasting me with fireballs. I kept taking them, straight to the chest, but I used Soulsuck on Malfuric to replenish my hit points. The blows were painful, but I was willing to endure anything as I walked closer and closer to her, taking her attacks at point-blank range. Tears were coursing down her cheeks, and her entire body was shaking. Finally, I was within 3 feet of her. My clothes were in cinders on my chest. My skin was burning away almost as quickly as I could heal it by stealing energy from Malfuric. But now I was within reach. I stretched out my ivory staff and touched it to the chain around her neck. I wasn't sure it would work. I didn't have any reason to believe it wouldn't work, given what I'd already seen in the mines, but it seemed almost too good to be true. But it did work. Spectacularly. The chain sizzled, smoked, then broke. The chainmail bikini changed back to leather, as did her boots. Finally, the collar around her neck dissolved, and its remains fell clanking to her feet. She gasped and felt her throat, touched the bare skin there, quite possibly feeling it for the first time. Then her beautiful smile of gratitude turned into a mask of pure hatred, and she turned and hurled her firebolts at Malfuric. I hit him with a dark bolt, too. Then dark fire, soul suck, doomsday, unholy quartet, everything in my entire arsenal. It wasn't enough. The bastard had started with 1,000,000 hit points. Even with all the damage he'd sustained, he was still only down to 500,000, and the other prisoners were being slaughtered by the dozens with every spell he cast. Then he did something I didn't expect. His eyes looked out across the hordes of prisoners and centered on me. I saw the evil glint in his eye, and I braced for his attack. But instead of blasting me, he hit Alaria. She screamed in agony and crumpled to the ground. It had been a critical strike. Nearly all her hit points were gone. I immediately rushed over and started casting self-sacrifice, pumping my health points into her to save her life. I cradled her in my arms, supporting her head in the crook of my arm. But then I felt the scalding pain of Malfuric's next attack hit me. My health dropped to 50%. Another hit like that, 2 at most, and I was a goner. But if I went back to Solsak, he would just attack Alaria again. He had me in a bind. He was making me choose, me or her. I looked down at my ivory staff that had fallen on the floor next to me, and wished for there to be some way I could magically use it to get us out of this mess. It had freed me from Malfuric's bindings. Could it somehow hurt him? But how? And then I remembered the one item about the staff that had mystified me when I first came into possession of it, and which I had never really given thought to since. The one-time use of the scepter to call upon the aid of the goddess. The very property that Jastoth had used to summon the goddess to fight us. It hadn't worked out for him the way he'd wanted, mostly because he was a wolf in sheep's clothing. Chalastia had even disavowed him before turning him over to me and Alaria. But would the scepter's summoning ability work for a warlock? Would it work for someone who wasn't one of her followers? I had to try. I picked up the staff, held it high in the air, and yelled, "I call upon the goddess Chalastia to come to our aid!" Then I slammed the staff into the glowing red stone of the throne room floor. There was a thunderclap above us, and a shaft of light broke through the darkness. A 50-foot-tall ghostly woman appeared, the upper half of her face hidden as she stared down at me, Alaria, Stig, and the thousands of demons. All fighting in the hall stopped. Even Malfuric was stunned into silence.
"You have called upon me, mortal. What do you wish? To save your life?"
I glanced at my followers, the people fighting for their freedom, and then down at the woman in my arms. I made my decision and looked up at the goddess. "I don't care about me. Save her," I said, lifting Alaria up the slightest, then flung my hand out at my army. "And please save them if you can." I could have sworn that the woman's mouth, which I'd never seen in anything other than a dour expression, smiled the tiniest bit.
"So shall it be done," she said, and held out her hand.
Malfuric screamed in fury.
"No, this is not your realm, nor your right."
But he was silenced by a blast of incandescence that burst from her hand and enveloped him in light. My demon friends scampered backwards as they watched Malfuric scream. His hit points dropped precipitously, but he was able to stagger and put the throne between the goddess and himself. I could see that his hit points were incredibly low, mortally low for him, in the 4 digits, but he was shielded from her attack now. He staggered backwards, his skin bubbling, smoke boiling off him like steam from a kettle. Then he stepped into the massive mirror behind the throne. He was getting away. But he stopped, his body halfway in and halfway out of the mirror, and looked back at me defiantly. He reached into a pouch on his belt, then pulled something out and thrust it defiantly into the air. It was Alaria's choker.
"She still belongs to me, little warlock,"
the demon lord roared with laughter. In my anger and impotent fury, knowing that there was no way I could take 5,000 hit points off him with one attack. I did the only thing I could think of. I threw the staff through the air. Not at him, but at the mirror. It was the Hail Mary of all Hail Marys, hoping against hope. But just like before, the staff delivered. It pinwheeled through the air and crashed into the mirror, which immediately shattered into a million shards. Malfuric's mouth dropped open in shock and agony. Then the half of his body still in this dimension peeled away from the mirror frame and fell to the floor, red smoke and fire boiling out of his severed torso. The other half of his body that had been in the mirror dimension was just gone. The hit point counter over his head dropped to zero. He was dead. The entire hall erupted in a roar of triumph. Every single prisoner thrust their arms into the air, howls of joy escaping their throats. XP numbers appeared and golden light enveloped me, signaling that I had leveled up. But I didn't pay attention to any of it. There was something far more important at hand. I looked down at Ilaria and laughed with sheer joy. She placed her hand tenderly against my cheek, smiled, and kissed me. It might have been the single happiest moment of my life. But it was abruptly cut short by an unearthly voice clearing its throat. We both looked up to see the goddess peering down at us. "Thank you," I said gratefully.
"You are welcome," she said. "Be forewarned. The scepter only works once. If you call again, I shall not hear you."
"Can I ask you a question?" She nodded her head in assent. "Why did you show up at all?" I asked. "I'm a warlock, not a priest. I'm not even one of your followers."
"Do you remember what I said at the church when you killed the false priest?"
I thought back. "You told everyone to stop following assholes and to be good to each other." Her dour mouth smiled again.
"I would say you fulfilled the second and inspired others to follow the first. Both my commandments were fulfilled, which is why I answered."
The goddess looked down at Ilaria.
"And when you asked not to save yourself, but her and your followers, I knew I had made the right choice."
Swear to God, I missed it up at her reply.
"Go in peace, children, and be good to one another,"
the goddess intoned, then slowly faded from view. Ilaria and I looked at each other, laughed in amazement, and I pulled her up to her feet and kissed her long and deep.
"Awkward," Stig mumbled at our feet.
There was a holler and cry all around us, and we broke off our kiss long enough to look at the demon surrounding us. Grok came forward and knelt on one knee, his head bent. One by one, the other demons followed suit, until 6,000 of them had bent their knee before me. "What the hell?" I asked, shocked beyond belief.
"I think they want you to be their king," Ilaria whispered.
"What? No," I yelled. "We didn't free you just so you could enslave yourself to another ruler." Grok looked up in confusion.
"But who will lead us then?"
"You'll lead yourselves. You'll figure out how to govern yourselves and the city. Everything here is yours, not mine. You worked for it in the mines. You fought for it here tonight. You earned it. You deserve it."
"But how will we govern ourselves? How will we—"
"Tomorrow," I interrupted, my voice tired. "It's been a long night, and I want to go to bed."
"Tomorrow, then," Grok agreed. "Tomorrow our future begins."
"Tonight," I shouted,
"you celebrate."
Every demon in the throne room erupted in a cheer. I turned to Ilaria.
"Now please, can we find an actual bed and get some sleep?"
She laughed, her voice like silver bells, and took me by the hand.
"So awkward," Stig mumbled.
"Stay put," I told him, "and drink as much wine as you can find."
"Thanks, boss,"
he cheered and disappeared into the celebratory throng, as Ilaria and I did our own disappearing act out of the throne room. 38. We walked into the royal bedroom, which was astounding. 20-foot-high ceilings, lavish decorations, and a balcony that looked out over the entire kingdom of Abaddon. From our height of 500 feet, you could see the glow of every stone building, and beyond them, the spiral patterns of mines and canyons where I had been imprisoned just hours before. The bed, though, was what was calling my name. It was gigantic. Imagine a California king bed built for a 15-foot-tall demon lord, and you'll get the idea of its size. I crashed down on the mattress and groaned in relief. So soft, so comfortable. Alaria sat down on the bed next to me, acting far more demure than usual. I opened my eyes and looked up at her. What? She held out her hand. Dangling from her fingers was her velvet choker with the skull on it. I'm ready for you to put this back on me, she said quietly. I frowned and sat up. What are you talking about? When Malfuric took this off and bound me with his own chains, he became my new master. But now that he's dead, I revert back to you. I stared into her eyes. There was a defeat and resignation there I had never seen before, coupled with a gentleness that I hadn't seen either. I took the choker, put it in the palm of her hand, and wrapped her fingers around it. I give it to you. It's yours. Her eyes widened.
But that means...
I smiled. You're free. Her eyes welled up with tears.
But how can you...
I've seen too much over the last couple of days. Saw it, but didn't understand it. Then I finally learned what it was like to wear a collar of my own. I don't want you to ever have to do that again. She hung her head shamefacedly.
But I did things just to get you to help me kill my ex-masters. You still want to give me freedom knowing that?
I went along with it because I wanted to sleep with you. She gave me a look like, well, of course. I laughed and shook my head. But that means I did it for my own selfish reasons. I didn't love you, not really, because otherwise I would have done what was best for you. I put my hand on hers, the one wrapped tightly around the choker. This is me doing the right thing, because I actually do love you now. You're free. And that's what I want for the woman I love. Tears coursed down her cheeks as she sobbed again, overcome with emotion.
So I can do anything I want?
Anything you want. And I'll still gladly help you kill your ex-masters.
That wasn't what I was talking about, she whispered,
then leaned forward and kissed me. I pulled back, my eyes wide with surprise. Are you sure? She smiled.
I've never been more sure about anything in my entire life.
I leaned in and kissed her again. That's all we did for the next few minutes. Just kiss. Slowly. Sensually. I luxuriated in the softness of her lips, the cinnamon sweetness of her tongue. As we kissed, I brushed my hand against her cheek, then slowly traced my fingertips down her neck to her shoulders, and then lower. My heart pounded as I felt the delicious contours of her breasts and began to caress their curves. The entire time, all I could think was, I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't believe I'm doing this. As we continued to kiss, I cupped her left breast in my palm, felt the incredible weight of her in my hand, the firmness of her beneath my touch. Then I brought both of my hands to the clasp in the middle of her bra and undid it.